Hello and welcome everybody to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palamariu, Global Logistics and Supply Chain Practice Head for Morgan Phillips Executive Search. We are in the business of recruiting top leaders to take businesses forward, and our job is also to connect you with global experts, thought leaders and executives in all things supply chain to share the latest developments in the industry. Today we will be hosting a slightly different setting where we will have a panel discussion on a very interesting topic for the industry. Diversity, more specific gender diversity as well, in supply chain. And for that we have here with us three guests that I'm very excited to introduce to you. Firstly, Annemieke Geller. Annemieke has worked in various senior roles around supply chains for the last 17 years, covering various geographies and industries across Europe, Africa, the Americas and Asia. First as a consultant for Accenture across supply chain projects, subsequently worked for British Petroleum in several positions across pricing, supply chain and investment strategy, and later on for Dyson as Global Head of Procurement and Global Head of Logistics. Moreover, since 2017, she started her own supply chain consulting company focused on procurement, logistics and end-to-end supply chain. Annemieke, welcome.
Thank you,
Rado. Saskia is our next on the panel. Saskia is also a long-standing professional in the supply chain space, having started her career in the building materials, worked for Cement Australia, and following which she was for several years in the global cement leader Holcim, where she served as Vice President of Supply Chain for one of the largest operations in Asia, namely Philippines. And in the last couple of years, she has served as Asia Chief Operating Officer of Danco Logistics, part of Maersk Group, and has just been promoted to take on the global CEO position. Furthermore, Saskia has recently been awarded the winner of Telstra Businesswoman in Asia Award. Saskia, welcome and pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
And last and but not least, we have Ingeborg Willenter. Inge is an experienced professional in international supply chain management for over 20 years in Europe and Asia for leading international consumer packaged goods companies like Kellogg, Sara Lee and British American Tobacco. Starting off with Sara Lee in international supply chain management and retail collaboration out of Netherlands, and subsequently worked for Kellogg's across Dublin, Hong Kong, Singapore and China in various senior roles across the supply chain and logistics functions. She was also regional head of logistics Asia Pacific for British American Tobacco, and since August 2016 is the senior director of logistics for Tapestry, former coach. Inge also sits on the advisory board of the Supply Chain Asia community. Inge, welcome as well.
Thank you.
Super. So very excited to have this discussion. And I would like to ask the first question, which is also just to get a little bit of background from each of you. How did you end up with a career in supply chain? Was this a deliberate choice, or how did it happen for each of you? Annemieke, if you want to start.
Interesting question, because I was thinking about it, and in business school I was very much intrigued about the whole logistics and operations modules and thought, okay, that's pretty cool stuff. And so I really went on with that track, but I didn't know when I started work that I would sort of really continue that path, because that's, you don't know where you're going to be ending up. But throughout my career it just went more and more specific into the supply chain space.
Super. Saskia, for you?
My path is probably a little less conventional. So I was working for the executive committee of Holcim, which is one of the world's largest building materials groups. And during that process, you had a lot of exposure to actually what made the business tick. And over time, as we started to look at the profitability enablers, it was very clear that there were some untapped potential in the business, largely around logistics and procurement. So I was asked, would I take the role in Philippines and start looking at how do we bring this together into being something that's a differentiator in both how we serve our customers, but also in how we drive the bottom line. So I went with a pretty big blank piece of paper actually into the Philippines, and it's a massive company there, so it was a really good opportunity to bring together all the formal training you have through business schools plus a lot of experience in industry to then see how does this fit as part of a business. But it is that last untapped mile, I think, in how businesses can really leverage both their customer and the bottom line. And I think that's where it's quite an exciting industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of pulls different resources together. So that's quite holistic. How about you, Inge?
Yeah, I think my path is more straightforward. I'm an industrial engineer, and my specialization was in production and distribution logistics. So my first job ended also from the specialization I did at the end of the studies. and was a project engineer for distribution logistics for Sarli. So that's really starting in logistics, and that's how I enrolled in the diverse elements of the whole supply chain, like also procurement, manufacturing. But in the end, I'm still having focus on logistics.
Good to know a little bit the background. And now, if we had to deep down or deep dive a little bit into today's topic, and diversity in supply chain and diversity in the supply chain community, and obviously you're very good examples of that. But I would want to get your individual perspectives into what's your thoughts and opinions on diversity in supply chain in general. Maybe Saskia, if you want to start.
Obviously, it has a long way to go, and I think nobody is challenging that. And I think there's two aspects to diversity. The gender topic has a very big mandate at the moment, but I think what underpins that is real diversity of thought, that boardrooms and executive leadership teams are actively bringing people onto their team that bring different perspectives. I think if you look around the supply chain industry, two things are really apparent to me. One is there's a lot of company management teams that are extremely cookie-cut homogenous. And the second part to that is there's a lot of movement within the industry. So a lot of people just sort of move a step left, particularly amongst the 3PL players. And I don't think that brings real diversity or outside perspective to help the industry evolve and get out of things like the commodity trap. So the diversity of thought, I think, is a really essential ingredient into this industry starting to take bigger steps forward to realize its potential value to businesses like Tapestry, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Saskia touched already on the point, because why we are talking about diversity or particular gender diversity is to get different perspectives in the work environment. And from the manufacturing side, based on the experience that I have, like indeed there's still a way to go. Probably we talk more about percentage of 25-30% if you look to either within supply chain, but then across functions like procurement or manufacturing, logistics, customer service, there's still a complete variety within the companies as well. And there's also a huge variety among the different industries. Like in the FMCG industries, and I'm working more in the luxury fashion, that's where I see a higher level of diversity among the whole workforce. And like Tapestry is a company that is very committed to inclusion and diversity as part of the core values. And some of the past companies I've worked for, they also have that on the agenda to bring in as part of the culture. But I think Tapestry has been quite leading in that, and I see that reflected already in the whole setup of the company in different layers. If you talk about gender diversity from age groups to different nationalities, there's a completely broad setup, a good mix, I would say. And other companies like female probably are more attractive to like food or personal care industries. Some companies I've worked for, they might be less attractive from a female perspective. So I think that also has to do slightly with the industry. Probably see that also in the real more tough business-to-business environment, or port authorities, or that's mainly
sharing
the
authority.
So there is to conclude on that, there's a variety among the different functions within the supply chain, and there's still a variety among the different industries. Still a way to go.
Yes. But I mean, also it's good as an example in what you mentioned about Tapestry. And I think there's a few companies that are quite more and more companies, at least it's a positive trend, that are doing things and are conscious about inclusion, about diversity, about including that in their missions, objectives, have putting it on the agenda and making sure that they have it very clearly stated, which is a good thing. And Miki, how about yourself?
I think there is supply chain as a function itself, it also struggles a little bit with an image. It sort of doesn't have per se a very clear structure in each and every company and sort of how it's being organized. And therefore, it's also difficult to attract talent in general. But there's a massive diversity in the type of interactions and the type of roles that you have, but they're not necessarily an obvious career choice. And I think that's really difficult for a lot of people to comprehend when they're setting up their careers. And to then attract talent and a diverse pool of talent, it's going to be, it's already a more difficult proposition to start off with. And then, like the typical pink topics, if you like fashion, food, and healthcare and well-being would then be a more obvious choice. And it's more well-known to people, and then sort of social supply chains become more accessible, if you like, for people. But otherwise, these the more B2B commodity types of industries are not that obvious of a choice per se. And that's where a lot of the supply chain activity sits.
Yes, absolutely. And it's usually the not so sexy places, right, where we struggle to have this diversity more than, like you said, on the consumer side, on the luxury side, and on all those aspects.
I think there's just one thing to add to that. Having worked in heavy industry and now in a company like Demco, actually there seems to be, what I have seen certainly across emerging parts of Asia, there is a lot of women, really a lot of women in the business, even in cement manufacturing, which is a really unsexy business. It's actually pretty cool when you get to know it. That it's, nobody sort of goes through university and says, well, I want to be, in cement manufacturing. And I worked with many really strong females. What happens is it's that gap from sort of upper mid-management to senior management. And I know this is actually a universal problem. I don't think this is just a supply chain problem. This is something that is endemic in many industries, where you just don't get that from, say, we're a 9-level organization, from say a level 5 to a level 6, which becomes a real leadership level. And I think that's where we have to be a lot more active, in all of us. And I think, to your point, in getting conscious of making those choices.
But the question is also then related to that, what is holding women back to
yes.
make an advancement in their career?
Yeah.
And especially if you, I've worked in the past also in a few very male dominant environments, and you see, it's the networking, you need to have a few skills really to excel and to be seen if you want to make a career steps. So, and that's often, I think, there's a whole gender discussion about what are the skill sets we need. It's the self-confidence of women that is required. The networking skills. If you talk with women, you often hear, okay, they're far more rational, just get our work. Especially if you have a family at home, and if you try to balance, you get your work done in the time that you're in the office. And that's, for certain years, that can hold, it's like the whole networking. So, will that help you to be seen and to make yourself well known broader in the organization? Because really, that's part also of the career development. And women do have a certain tendency to more give in on that one.
Good point. And also, it boils down to all of this, and as well as to mindset, because sometimes the issue, the major issue, is mindset of the organization or of the current management team, which historically in most industries has been male dominated. I mean, it's just a reality. And that I think needs a little bit of upgrading or shifting or moving as well, because most cases is not, of course we all have commitments, and definitely on the family side it's more taxing for a woman than for a man maybe, but that's not the reason that the management position is not available or it's not made available.
And I don't believe it's actually a women's issue per se. It's an organization issue, and any company that really wants to drive innovation and their top line forward, they should think about having more diverse teams in general. And whether that's a gender issue, it's like diversity at large that can really bring that innovation and increase productivity forward. And there's so much research being done about it, but it's not a female issue. So for me, sort of creating more female networking groups is great, but actually it's like, well, what are sort of boards doing about this? Like, what is the male leadership doing about it? And the sort of, that is where a lot of the voice needs to sort of come from.
Mm. And to this point, and kind of to leeway into the next question, what do you think are the, right now as we speak, what do you think are some of the critical skills that you need today to be successful? Because now supply chains are more and more international, more and more diverse, more and more digital. What do you think is critical in today's environment? Maybe.
Yeah, I think a few points, like how I also say to my teams done in the past, like try to develop your young in your career more broadly, like functional, different functions, and look into different industries, because then you build it quite well, a more well-rounded supply chain skill, and ideally end-to-end. I also say focus on a few, on the four C's, like be also commercial focused, so always know wherever you are in the whole value chain, what is the value you create for by your company or by your own team, or by your stakeholders, or the services you deliver to, but also in the whole value chain where you sit. And I think that's a very good skill to have. Really think commercially within the supply chain. Be connecting the dots, so connecting the different silos, and collaborate a lot with your stakeholders internally, like procurement, manufacturing, finance. If you're on the demand planning side, really understand what's the impact upstream, and also be creative in a way. Creativity in the supply chain steps out. And think out of the box, that will really help.
Annemieke?
And those are really cool skills, and that's sort of the fun thing about supply chain. You're sort of constantly collaborating, creative, being creative about finding those solutions and communicating. But I would really add to that, you do need to like your numbers too. There's an analytical piece in the space as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And more important, I mean, we are actually working on several assignments now, which is deeply rooted into analytics. Data science is becoming more and more important. Being able to pull that that vast big data and the vast amount of information and making sense of it is crucial. And getting accurate data in the first place is furthermore important.
I like very much what Inga said about getting into that commercial space. I think too few women go through the P&L side of the business, which is potentially, I was just putting the dots together actually while you were talking, which is also one of those roadblocks to getting to senior management levels, because you've just got to have had that commercial and P&L exposure to be credible in senior business leadership positions. So I think that is, and loving your numbers is very much there. In terms of the point on what is involved in the transformation, I think it's people like us taking active time to coach young women through the business. And it is that one-on-one and the role modeling and talking to them about where they see their challenges. I have 11 that I spend time on, and they're all people that have reached out just randomly and said, look, you know, could you spend some time with me? There's one male and the rest are women, and I'm quite equal. I'll spend my time anywhere if people want it. But what's quite interesting is the topics that they ask for help on. It is authority and presentation making. How do I have more presence? How do I lead with authenticity so that I'm not trying to be something that I'm not? How can I be comfortable in that space? And then the conversation I had with a young woman who's coming through our business at the moment yesterday was actually around group dynamics. And she was explaining what is happening in a room and what she can get a sense of. And how does she then work with that to be able to do something with it? So it was really good. And it reminds me a lot of things that you've learned over the years that you sort of don't use every day. But it is that active pulling the next generation through and showing them what's possible. And I think equally from a true diversity point of view, it's not easy for anyone. And I think it is recognizing that those years in getting to a senior management position, they're hard. There is no easy way. It is simply hard, right? You have to do your numbers. You have to get out there. You do long hours and you have to travel. And that there is no easy way around that. I know in my company, what I love very much is then the ability to make your work-life balance your own. So if you've had to travel back over a Saturday, then do what you need to on a Monday, but work from home. You know, you get this balance that I feel I have ownership over, and that's quite empowering, and feeling comfortable in my position and feeling that, you know, I can balance my family's needs with mine. And I think, you know, that is very much the question for people as they come through. How do I handle all of this? But again, I think if we can give people P&L, really meaningful P&L roles as women, And if we can then coach the women as senior leaders coming through and make them aware it's possible, but they have to be also prepared to dig in, not get there just because you're a woman or of a nationality or whatever it is that we're looking for in diversity at the time.
Yeah. And I mean, typically in life, hard work is part of the package, and no matter what you do, it's a prerequisite. And indeed, having that kind of supporting context around and supporting organization around is also critical.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that we can see a lot more in today's context in the future.
But maybe one point to add to that, because that's where I think in Asia you have such a variety as well. Eh? Like, still we deal in this part of the world where we want to bring and also groom talent from the local countries to bring into the management teams of the local, like we talk about Bangladesh, Pakistan, or like for my past environments as well. And that's where also gender equality is even in the social structure, not
yes.
So some markets have way to go when those, I've been to countries where I was also talking, I went to Bangladesh, talking to the group of women there in the company, we had quite a good spread in different levels. The way for them to be far more assertive, to be speak out, and still where to go in some cultures. And that's where it can help definitely with what you also mentioned, Saskia, on the coaching, mentoring, where they learn the tools and the tricks that can help them to grow.
And authentically in their environment. I think that's
right. Yeah. That's where, coming back to your point, also the role male, the whole society needs to be trained for bringing, becoming more inclusive.
Mm.
Yeah.
In Asia, there's still a way to go.
And if I can ask, because it would be good maybe to go to the point where, what have you seen and how can organizations groom future female leaders? I mean, have you seen some good case studies? Have you seen some organizations that do this well? Maybe it's a good time also to go a little bit of sharing session in terms of what is happening on the market and what are some good examples. Maybe Annemieke, if you want to start, also from the startup scene, if you see them.
So I work for a number of larger companies, and I think those sort of companies that are really putting an effort on diversity and inclusion and have like formalized programs and even like formalized mentoring programs. My time in BP, there were like female groups and like we have in here in Asia, like women in oil and gas type of gathering groups, and actually it's more guys joining those groups as well because there seems to be a lot of drinks going on. And but that sort of puts the topic, an awareness to the topic, and actually sort of also approaching it in a very diverse way, which I think is really great. When you then sort of move now into sort of an arena where I'm now more involved in the whole startup scene, there's still a lot of that's still very much dominated by males, and probably also because they're sort of a little bit less risk averse, sort of taking those bolder steps and to venture out. And there's a lot of technology underpinning a lot of the startups, and technology is very much driven by an engineering group and sort of the tech guys, and that's not a very diverse community in itself. If you just look at numbers, and so that is sort of not necessarily bringing that level of diversity and innovation that you would expect, which is like a massive opportunity to tap into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, and especially because we're talking about startups and we're talking about people that should be creative and they should bring that new to the table, right? And
yeah,
come up with a new solution.
Yeah.
Mm. Saskia.
So close to home within Danco, I think what's quite interesting, I think we're relatively mature. So if I look around at the regional COOs, 3 out of 4 are actually female, and there's a lot of different nationalities. So Trang, who is our EMEA COO, is Vietnamese, working in a Middle Eastern environment. Christine, who is American, heads up the Europe COO community. I was here, so I think as an Australian, so I think we have a good balance, and it's even in the next levels down, and that was something I was relatively conscious. So of our area COOs, 3 are female and 3 are male, and that wasn't deliberate. That was actually, they're the right people for the job, and people were given a lot of equal consideration. Our country head in China, which is a really big part of our business, is a Chinese woman, and she's fantastic. Same in Indonesia. We've got an Indonesian woman, and she was deliberately brought through as a successor candidate and had proper development programs around preparing her to take that role from her former predecessor, was a German man. So just to give an idea on how that works. There are other companies like Telstra, which I'm familiar with because of recent events, and they have programs where 50% of all candidates for roles must be female. And I know we were looking at doing this in Wholesome, but with a probably not as much, I think, obvious success, where 1 in 3 should be. And if you didn't have that candidate, then what was the reason why, and how did you then actively build a pipeline so you could bring people through things like your background and with process engineering and so on. But I think it has to be a very deliberate, conscious choice to at least get a mix of diversity at the recruitment candidate level so that you're making a judgment of equal consideration. And I think that's where you start to get a seismic shift then in who can come through the business. And the conversation that I have over and over again is the stretch assignment. Is somebody ready? And I know that there's been much said about this, you know, from some like people like Sheryl Sandberg about, you know, that some people will just go, yeah, I'm ready for that development. And other people go, oh, is she ready? Can she do that? And my advice there is give the person the go, but back them up. Give them the chance of success by providing a coach in the business and by providing clarity around expectations so that people do have an opportunity to come in and show what they can do rather than going with a conservative choice of, you know, somebody you know, which I think does often happen. So it's it is around those two things. But I can say there is movement, but again, it starts at the top, and it's really that conscious decision making. And you said it from a board level to say, well, actually, this is important to us. We do recognise the benefits, and they're well spoken about. And I think just to end on a question, it frustrates me that we're still having awareness discussions at this point in time when this has been a topic for 10 years. So what decisions are boards making, really? And Uber's my most frustrating example, but where you bring out the token female at the end when, you know, the sky's falling down. And anyway, I'll go into that. But it's really that discussion around how do we make active decisions and then actively set people up so they've got a chance of doing well.
Yeah. Oh, it's excellent points, and indeed, I mean, it's a reality. We gotta put it on the table. And I mean, if you look in most companies, the board level, mostly it's still the same kind of demographics. It's not very gender balanced. It takes time.
It's not even color balanced.
It's not even color balanced. Yes, it takes time. Like everything takes a long time because it's more mindset and perception, and I don't know what people were used to. In certain industries, it definitely, and depending on the companies, I think maybe sometimes it's associated with the more the companies in the eye of the press, the more they need to also, you know, show that they're doing all the right things. It's kind of like the politically correct, but you know, that's what also setting a good trend. There are companies, there's one of our clients that actually have, and I think you mentioned also with the 50% of the applicants, they also have a certain. They enforce a certain KPI and a certain measurement to make sure that everybody is given an equal chance or as much of an equal chance, which is also maybe it's a bit forced, but also is good because it kind of makes people do that. So there's some good sharing. Inge, do you have some?
Yeah, just based on the experience, like in July we had the ACR operations workshop for director level and above, where about 60 people, and there was a 50-50 split, I would say, among the gender. So that was well balanced from my experience. That way, I think Tapestry also on the different, in the broader general management levels, there's quite a good, great leaders, female leaders that we have now in the organization. In some of the past companies, I know in the first company I started, it was around the year 2000 already, where the incentives came to the general managers or even the operational functional lead to put females in their management team or in their functional management team. And I know some might even misuse that. And then,
yeah, that's
okay. Suddenly the whole management team was female. So then I always laugh about what that would mean for the bonus of that GM in that country. And But I think it is about, in Kellogg's we had set up, chaired by the female president of one of the lead countries. She was also contested to bring this topic on. And we set up the Women of Kellogg, was a group where we would discuss openly all kinds of topics where women would feel far more fulfilled within the work environment on all the different levels. And it was an open community to network and to learn from guest speakers, have the questions, but also clearly set some policies. So we defined like a kind of toolkit for even if people would step out, they could take a sabbatical or even on maternity when to prepare the work place around you, because often people step out for 5 months and then like people are just taking on the work, but then preparing the environment, the colleagues, and putting maybe someone in as an assignment clearly to fulfill that is also far more fair for the colleagues around. And all these type of instruments, like were discussed and we've taken them by the management, regional management, supported by the regional management. It's still a platform that is discussed. And one of the KPIs we agreed at that time with HR is to put always 50% female leaders in every leadership course that will be in the organization.
It's a good idea.
So sometimes you enter and then 20-30% female participation. But really to enforce as an organization yourself in the participation level is like a first step. It's the same with the number of interviews that you want to have the best candidate, no matter what
background. Exactly.
But you want to build the diverse reflection of the society to make sure that you thrive better as a company. That's,
yeah,
I think, the whole purpose. But then finding the right candidate, it's good to put in some KPIs like at least 50% of the interviews should be from either different backgrounds or based on gender. So you could make a selection. There are definitely ways to do that.
Yeah.
It's all how HR or the regional management or top management endorses that and brings it into the culture of the company, so that everyone thinks about it when interviewing jobs or selling trainings.
And it's also about reflecting the norm, because I mean, if it's not the norm to have any sort of females in your workforce and suddenly there pops one up in your interview process, that still looks odd. And that's a problem, sort of as part of this whole recruitment process, that you have to have at least like 3 out of 4 candidates to increase their hiring rate with 67% that the female will get the job. So that is massive. So you have to have 75% of the interview candidate pool to be sort of to increase the chance of a hiring to 67%. And that's bizarre. There's research done on that space as well. Well, because it's not part of the norm, and that's where sort of things go a little bit skewed. It's like, even if you set those, you really need to start setting those targets, that there's an increased number of having that diversity to start changing that norm and start challenging it.
Yeah. And then to add on to what was being said in I want to reinforce also the idea that it really comes from the top. And the top management and the board sets a clear message and direction. I mean, it's not just paying lip service. If you really endorse, if you create different programs, create different KPIs, and you back it up and you show your support. One of our clients on the board, they are always reinforcing. It sets a very strong message across the organization and outside the organization. Because what is happening with the Generation Y and Generation, I don't know how they're called, the ones.
The millennials.
The millennials. The millennials. And they really want to belong to an organization that is diverse. And one CEO recently told me that they went to a career fair and they presented the company and they were all males. And then one of the students, who was female, asked them, so do you have any females on your board or what's happening? And then he realized, wow. And she was 20, 22, but there's a strong expectation and message from the younger population around those lines. And I think that will also transform.
you have to be able to see yourself in that future. And I remember a company I worked for before, there was an African-American gay man who worked with us, who was fantastic, but we were working in Switzerland, and he said, I don't think this is my company. I cannot see myself represented anywhere, you know, and it was a very homogenous leadership panel that, you know, he said, yeah, I don't think this is for me. And he went and joined another company where, as he said, he was much more reflected in the DNA of the company and had a really... and has had actually a stellar career since doing that. And I thought it always stayed with me when he said that. And I thought he was absolutely right.
Yeah. And then, you know, back to the point where, I mean, there's case studies and there's research being done. It makes business sense for diversity. Diversity is better for business, is better for top line.
Yeah.
And we have a long way to go still.
But the fantastic news for the young professionals that are eager to learn and to expose themselves, there are fantastic opportunities. Like with the target set now, if you are a young, ambitious female in supply chain, you can come a long way.
Yeah.
Because if you do well and you perform well in an interview, you probably have a higher success rate if the company is low on gender diversity. They give you a preference compared to if you're equal to your male participants. They probably give you immediately that consideration.
We're actually about to start trialing into the new year a new approach, because it is that maternity leave age gap too, where it's difficult sometimes for people to come back, and then also the business has big question marks on how do we fill that role while the person's not there. So we've looked at our shared service center in India, and we're going to start assigning people from India into our operations business to fill the maternity leave time that somebody needs to take off, so that we've got the cross-training for interest, so they're getting development, growth and exposure into the broader business, and then the person who's taking maternity leave has somebody already equipped with the skills who can come and fill that role for the duration that they're out. So it also helps to leverage, because we're all multinational sort of style businesses, helps leverage the network. And that idea actually came out of our India business, and it fits a deliberate business need, but it supports so many other parts of how the business can grow and develop and benefit from it. So I think that's quite an exciting. Yeah, so we had our first call on it on Monday night. So I'm quite keen to see how that develops.
Yeah, excellent example. And I think there's more and more, and I think more, the more noise will be created, the more of these things will become the norm, and then slowly everything will change, and perception and mindset is on the way to being changed. But indeed, as always, it takes a little bit of time. Great. So thank you very much for the sharing, for the good case studies, for the good examples, for the good interaction. Appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us today, Saskia and Mike Inge. And hopefully we'll continue and we'll see much more diversity coming up in this.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamariu.com/podcast for all the show notes, links and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.